My name's Tim Walbrecht, and what I plan to do this evening and then again tomorrow morning is take a look at teenage depression. Tonight specifically, I hope to talk about teen depression, its characteristics, its symptoms, and its sources of despair. I've worked with the teenage population for 14 years, mostly in the area of youth ministry or family ministry, but I'm also a counselor in private practice, and many of my clientele have been adolescents. Tomorrow, I already talked about it, didn't I? Tomorrow we're going to talk about the coping and what can be done, and if there's any time, maybe even talk a little bit about suicide. Last week on a tape entitled, Is This For Real? The Adolescent Years, I went through some of the physical changes that go on for adolescents, the spiritual, the emotional, the mental, and the social. But tonight we're just going to concentrate on teen depression. And I want to start off by saying I can understand why many of the parents are here, and that is good. And when one talks about teen depression, several red flags kind of go up. Especially as parents and adults, we read things in the paper, we hear things on the news, or we hear stories coming home from schools and the like. But let me start off by saying that most, vast majority of the professionals feel that most teenagers turn out fine. Okay? And they generally, the experts tend to agree that it's basically a myth that all teenagers must go through some type of adolescent storm to assert their independence. Some kids do, some kids don't. Okay. If you're talking about numbers, it's pretty well felt that around 20% of 17 million teenagers are in some type of real serious mental problem that should be hospitalized or taken care of, and the vast majority of them are not being taken care of. Of the numbers that are left, approximately about another 20% will act out in some way as in teenage depression. As we've talked about, all kids, all adults for that matter, go through some form of depression and the ups and downs of life, and that's what we're going to be talking about right now. Let me start off with some basically grim statistics for you. According to the National Center for Health Statistics, these give a grim picture of the growing risks that the adolescent can entail. When I'm talking about adolescent, I'm talking basically around age 12 to, let's say, age 19. As I mentioned on tape last week, many of the professionals are starting to push the adolescent age not only down, but also up to the age of 25 to 27. I don't want to get into that here, but you can listen on the other tape about why. Some of the statistics. Every 78 seconds, an adolescent in this country attempts suicide. Every 90 seconds, one succeeds. Every 20 minutes, an adolescent is killed in an accident. Every 80 minutes, one is murdered. Every 31 seconds, an adolescent becomes pregnant. Every 30 seconds, a child's parents are divorced. Nearly half of all high school seniors have used an illegal drug at least once, and almost 90% of the seniors have used alcohol, some on a daily basis. Sort of paints a grim picture. What are some of the characteristics of teen depression? Well, there are several. And before I get right into the characteristics, I got ahead of myself. I want to talk just real shortly about what I mean by depression. Sigmund Freud got us thinking of depression as being guilt and anger turned inward. And that was generally the belief for, and still is somewhat, but it was generally the belief for many, many decades. Today, it is seen a little more broader. It is seen as a result of a complex mix of social, psychological, and or physical elements that can act on the nervous system, triggering sadness, hopelessness, self-depreciation thinking, and behavior changes. And it can either be short-term or long-term. And there's various types. And the two that we kind of will talk about are the reactive depression, which is reactive towards something in life, some life event, and includes achievement of long-term goal or other positive life events. It's usually quite sudden. That's generally the depression that we will be talking about. Another type that kind of floats in and is a concern, I think, should be a concern for parents of adolescents is endogenous. That's internally generated with no obvious external causes. Nice fancy words. Physiologically, it is a disturbance, possibly result of changes in brain's biochemistry, many times triggered by the food that we eat. Okay, too much sugar, too much caffeine, something on that line. Those are the type of depressions we're going to be talking about. Now to the characteristics. There's a difference somewhat, or extremely so, between adult depression and adolescent depression. Depression shows itself differently in the adult. The adult feels and looks sad and can look very lethargic. Teens don't always look that lethargic. In fact, teens tend to act out their depression. They become very angry, rebellious, they yell a lot. They will act out their depression more than the adult will. Teens elicit a different response to their depression. Adults' depression may initially elicit sympathy or empathy. Teenage depression generally elicits or provokes alarm, anger from other people, fear, and frustration. Teenage depression can be extremely intense. When they are sad, they are really sad. When they are depressed, they are really depressed. Life is seen in absolutes for the teenager. Not too many gray areas, a lot of black, a lot of white. The difficulty is that they don't have the skills or the experience to know that in a long-term basis, time can heal. They don't see that there is always hope, and they don't see that they can survive a crisis and perhaps learn from it. They don't see the light at the end of the tunnel all the time. If there's a breakup in a relationship, it's the end of the world because that's the only relationship that they really were involved in, and they don't see the possibility for another relationship yet. It takes time. So when they are sad, they're really sad, and when they become depressed, they become really depressed. An unfortunate aspect of teenage depression is that it is often minimized by adults. Part of this comes from the problem of adults going through a different life stage than the adolescent, and the parents may react with some anger, jealousy, and hurt, and will say something like, "But you're so young, you have your whole life ahead," or "Your problem isn't as big as my problem is," something on that line. Some of the symptoms of adolescent depression. Then I want to talk about some of the despair. Where did the despair come from? These are quite technical. If you're taking notes, don't worry about spelling the words correctly. You can come up and see my notes. That's all right. Symptoms of adolescent depression. One of them is the dysphoric moods. There's an increase in the sadness, in the anxiety, and the express hopelessness. For a teenager, when I say hopelessness, when they really, really get depressed and their mood really becomes depressed, there's actually a feeling of worthlessness. That's a feeling of worthlessness with an attitude of helplessness for the teenager. The difference between that and let's say someone who's suicidal, it's more than a matter of words or semantics. But for once, for a person who's suicidal, we say that a person who's suicidal has a feeling of hopelessness and helplessness, whereas someone who's just depressed will be the feeling for an adolescent, it's worthlessness and helplessness. Little change of words there. In the moods, they may seem bored, listless, disenchanted with life in general. They exhibit little interest and pleasure in things that he or she used to enjoy. There are times, and I point this out in my other tapes, where the adolescent will be stretched out on the sofa in the general posture that adolescents take, with one leg over the back of the sofa and their left arm or right arm, depending on which way they're facing, dragging on the floor. And that may not be a sign of depression. That may be just a sign of they need time out. Okay, adolescents do need time to stare off into Never Never Land and to think things through. You have to ask, or you have to really watch for the mood changes. They may just be tired, and they may go into a lethargic state, and that's a little different than the depressed state. One way that I kiddingly and jokingly talk about is to find out if the somewhat difference of the two is if they're on the sofa, you may just want to jingle the car keys about 20 feet away and see how fast the response is. You can also try dropping them, and if they're just in the lethargic stage, they'll grab the keys before it hits the floor. It happens all the time. There can be a change in the eating and sleeping habits. This is pretty well obvious because teenagers like to eat, and all of a sudden they lose an interest in food. There's a major or rapid weight loss, or they may swing the other way and become very compulsive overeating and suddenly put on a lot of weight in a short period of time. Sleeping wise, any one of the sleeping disorders may crop up, insomnia. Early awakening, that is uncharacteristic. Teenagers like to sleep in. That's why at Holden Village they don't get together until about 10:30. Or they may develop a confused sleeping pattern. They may sleep during the day and be awake all night. Okay. Social isolation is another one. Lost interest in friends, broken ties. And it's one of the sad things about this, just when they may need friends. They may become in being depressed. They may become overbearing on their friends. Become too dependent on their friends, and in fact drive their friends away when in fact they need the friends there. But because of this dependency on their friends and the overextension of that, they actually drive their friends away. There's a sudden change in behavior. School-wise, this can be a drop in grades, skipping classes, fights at school, truancy. The school generally is commonly used as a stage to call for help. A lot will go on in the school, and also you'll be getting reports home. Okay, the school is used as a stage to act out. They may at one time have been very cooperative, then suddenly become belligerent. Now, this does not mean just changing their mind or taking a different point of view, because that happens too. In the morning, they'll want to go out and save the world from world hunger, and a couple hours later, they could really care less about that. That's part of going back and forth. That's their mental ping pong game, so to speak. But this is where they become belligerent all of a sudden, okay? Suddenly belligerent or suddenly angry, and there's a general loss of motivation. Acting out behavior, which is a response to the discomfort that is felt but unable to cope or identify with. Teenagers don't have the skills to cope with the depression or what's out there in the world, and they have it's my feeling, and I'm not the only one in the world that work with adolescents, but it's my feeling that they don't have the instruments or the way to get these feelings out. They don't communicate well. They tend to hold it all in. And acting out behavior could be an increase in the number of home conflicts. You can become as serious as running away or cutting classes, which I mentioned, or become sexually active, shoplifting, or even getting into drug abuse, use of drugs or alcohol. Another symptom is hyperactivity. They will pace restlessly. They will act up in class. They will appear to be very nervous, anxious, unable to relax, irritable. They move from one room of the house to the other, from one chair to the other, from the floor to the sofa, back to the floor. Another example of hyperactivity is that they become over-involved in a frenzy of activities, usually related to school. They become over-involved. It's quite common in depressed adolescents because this is seen as a phobic reaction against depression. It's their inner way of fighting the depression is to become more active, when in fact more activity tends to make them more depressed because things don't get done. Things don't get done. They start to criticize themselves excessively, self-criticism. They see themselves as complete failures or ugly or unpopular, no friends, incompetent. Another one is extreme passivity. Sort of related to some of the other things that I've been talking about. Basically, withdrawal from activities, interests, and friends, sulking, lying around the house, or constantly watching TV. And this is, teenagers will watch TV, that's true, okay? But what happens is, and it's almost become like it's cyclical, because they will watch more TV, which increases their vegetative state, or developing vegetative state, which in turn increases their depression, okay, which in turn causes them to watch more TV. And if you watch them closely, they will watch stuff that they normally don't watch because they aren't really watching TV. Okay, all of a sudden they're watching stuff that they aren't noted for watching, and simply because they aren't aware of what they're watching. Okay. They start to have psychosomatic complaints. These are complaining about pains or illnesses. And if the exam reveals no organic disease or disorder, depression may be the culprit. And I do wish that more doctors would take that into consideration instead of just sending them home. Common psychosomatic symptoms that are associated with depression in adolescents are headaches, stomach aches, low back pain, increased sensitivity to aches and pains in general, general fatigue, feeling tired regardless of the amount of sleep. They'll sleep 16 hours and get up and complain about being tired, and then go back to sleep. And what this does, this becomes very frequent, and it tends to disrupt the regular family routine and their own routine. Another symptom for adolescent depression could be substance abuse. Alcohol and drugs are at once a symptom and a cause of depression. Close to 50% of all suicide attempts or completions for adolescents are alcohol and drug related. And you're talking about, I've got the statistic here, I'll find it later. You're talking about tens of thousands of attempts. Caffeine, which we find in coffee, tea, colas, and chocolate, is a causative factor in instances of gastrointestinal problems, anxiety, headaches, and also a cause of depression. So if they're drinking 6 to 8, 10 cans of Coke, and I had a junior high, then a senior high guy in my one of my youth groups, and he drank a six pack of Coke every day. He carried it around. It's his favorite drink. He does it all the time. He can't understand why he doesn't feel well. He doesn't blame it on the Coke. But caffeine, in fact, I'm not the only one, but I would imagine within the next 5 or at least 10 years, they're going to have to start putting some type of warning labels on things that contain caffeine, because caffeine is not really good for people. Okay. And it can cause depression. It just doesn't kick people into, you know, getting up. I know we all love our coffee, but it just doesn't get everybody going that way. It can be a depressant for many people. There's an increase in the risk-taking behavior. which tends to be very uncharacteristic. This is another symptom. Carelessness in using safety precautions and restraints. An example would be not using their seat belt, which they tend to always have done at all times. All of a sudden they're not, or they're hanging out of fast-moving car windows, going down the freeway, or they're playing tag. A fun game with many adolescents is they like to play tag, not just with cars, but hanging out of cars and try to touch the other speeding car. They may drive into the school parking lot about 50 miles an hour and see how close to the wall that they can slam on the brakes and still be okay. Things like that. Risk-taking behavior. Running away from home is considered a risk-taking characteristic. They may start to want to participate in more dangerous sports or activities. Accidents. They become more constant. A form of self-destructive behavior. See, when you're upset, you develop poor judgment. You lose your good judgment. You become a person with poor judgment. And very impulsive. Very impulsive. So what happens is depressed adolescents, for that matter, depressed adults too. A lot of these symptoms are similar to adults. But accidents will increase. If you're depressed, you make more mistakes because you're not thinking straight. Okay. And this would be, I've seen families that complain about the car being wrecked 3 or 4 times a week. You know, they go out and smash the fender, and then we get a fender, and they no serious fender, they go out and smash the fender again, and you know, something else happens. That's part of that. Okay, then they're sexually acting out. This is a long definition. A symptom of depression, especially when it occurs in teenage girls, increased activity in contrast to long-held beliefs. It can include contraceptive carelessness and, of course, becoming pregnant. Promiscuity in both adults and teens is usually a desperate attempt to banish feelings of depression and to increase self-esteem by feeling wanted, to achieve intimacy, and with pregnancy gain love and unquestioning acceptance of another human being, namely a baby. A great number of teenage pregnancies are not unwanted nor unplanned. And some professionals are even thinking more than 50% of the pregnancies in teens are not unwanted or not unplanned. They see parenthood as a way of recapturing the joy of the childhood that they are losing, that they have lost. So they decide to start their own family. And then the last symptom is, of course, the suicidal talk or the suicidal behavior. Does anybody, I'm sure you've done some reading or know some of that. What are some of the suicidal type of talk or suicidal type of behavior that happens with either adults or teens? It's pretty well the same. Anybody? What are some things that happen?
When a teenager messes up on something, they get really mad. They can just say, you know, off the bat, I just kill myself. Mm-hmm. And just thinking, oh, well, you know, it's no big deal. But they can just say it.
Okay. What other sort of things do they do besides just say it?
Give away prized possessions.
Give away prized possessions. Correct. Anything else?
Loners. Isolate. Become loners.
Become loners. Isolation.
Mm-hmm.
Write letters. Anybody else?
How about the books they choose to read, the poetry, for instance, Sylvia Plath's work?
Say that again. The books that they choose?
The books they choose, or the poetry, or I've noticed, I'm a high school librarian, and I noticed that a lot of kids who seem to be depressed are reading Sylvia Plath.
Oh, interesting. Could be. I
can
see
that. Can you say more about that author?
Yeah. Someone wants to know, can you say more about that author?
Sylvia
She's a an author who wrote in the 70s, I would guess. She did commit suicide. And much of her writings, her autobiography, her poetry is very introspective and very sad, very deep. And quite a number of adolescent girls are reading her. Mostly introspective ones. Some who are, who might be classified as being loners and who might be depressed.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not, but
mm-hmm.
Thank you.
If you suspect your adolescent, or any adolescent for that matter, or any adult for that matter, as being thinking thoughts such as that, you know, ask them. Because if they are, they are. And if they're not, you're not going to put the thought in their mind, okay? All professionals will tell you, go up and ask the person straight out, have you been thinking about killing yourself? You don't put the thought into anybody's head if they have been thinking about it or haven't. Can I see a hand go up over here?
How about the change in music?
That could be. From what to what? To me, it's all.
Acid.
Going from one extreme to the other, I didn't know there was such a thing.
Well, most of that acid is unsuicidal. I was just watching, my grandmother's got cable, and I was watching MTV, and one of the guys was looking over the cliff, you know, singing a song and looking down over the cliff, about ready to jump over.
What were the words? Do you remember what the words were?
I couldn't understand them. I don't know.
He was something about wanting to jump or going over. Do it.
Was part of it. Yeah.
Any response from the teenagers?
Yeah.
Okay.
I know somebody that tried to commit suicide, and he said when he gets really depressed, he likes to listen to the Eagles and stuff. And his sister knows when he's really depressed because he just sits in his room and listens to the Eagles. And so it's that kind of music that makes him depressed or that he listens to.
Anybody else?
Sometimes they might want to commit suicide, but they really don't want to. They take a lot of aspirin or something like that just to get attention.
I don't want to spend too much time on the suicide aspect because we're going to touch on that tomorrow also, but with some of the statistics and some of those symptoms too, but also leave you with a ray of hope, so hopefully. Let's talk about sources of despair. Where do they get these symptoms from? Well, they have to come from someplace, and I've basically broken it down into three areas. One, society in general, one in family, and one in just generally growing up. Where did the despair come from? Well, I think some of the despair comes from some physical problems. It can be a serious illness, a handicap, an unwanted pregnancy, or a learning disability. I think adolescents that have a learning disability have a difficult time of getting through it. That doesn't mean they can't get through it. Several people have gotten through it, many. I think it's just a little more difficult. Another one is loss and a rejection in a relationship by some important figure. This can be a loss from a parent, either through divorce, death, moving away, or an emotional loss where they just kind of cut you off. It could be a friend who has moved away. It can be a relative, or it can be a loss of a pet. Very important pet can also cause depression. Failure. And most of the time, for an adolescent, failure at school, possibly work, but mostly at school. And part of our culture has a problem with failure, and we start kids off failing early in school, and they kind of wear that failure a lot of times through school. Some of them get through it, some of them don't. And they learn to fail at an early age without the necessary coping skills. And I used to think years ago, especially when I would hear it, and I would tend to agree that, well, they have to fail, it builds character. And I really don't think failure builds character. Failure just teaches you that you're going to fail. And I don't see that as a character builder, not with adolescents or a child or with children. I mean, I'm an adult and I get all bent out of shape when I fail, so I don't think it's built my character at all. Okay, there another one in our society is the increased mobility due to the rapid change in society. I think adolescents are forced to say goodbye a lot. They move around a lot. Thousands are forced to adapt to new homes, new friends, and new schools. And it isn't uncommon for many adolescents to make a change 3, 4, 5 times during their high school years. I think society, another source is all of the areas of abuse, the sexual abuse, the psychological abuse, the physical abuse, and the emotional abuse, which goes on. That's a source of despair, a big source of despair. I think there's changing standards of sexual morality. There's increased availability, of course, of birth control, which forces earlier decisions on how to handle a person's sexuality. And the experts are starting to say, quite plain, that you can't begin to talk about sexual issues with the senior high, because senior high aren't, you know, they're past that stage of making that first decision. The first decision on whether to use drugs or to, you know, engage in sex has been the last few years in the junior high level. Now that we're starting to see that those decisions are showing up in the 6th and 5th grade level. Okay. I think another source of despair for them is chasing that American dream. Okay. Which today, happiness, I see that happiness is defined as wealth and power. Which I was a church history, not a church history, not in college. In college, I was an American history major, and during the time of the revolution and our early part of our history, happiness was equal to freedom and independence. And now we're saying that happiness is defined as wealth and power. The college degree no longer guarantees a job. Owning a home is more difficult. So a lot of the adolescents are saying, why? Why even attempt? Why try? World pressures, such things as nuclear war, world pollution, terrorism, threats to world peace. We're finding out that many of our energy resources are not infinite, but rather finite. And most of the adolescents see the world tomorrow as being worse than today. So again, the question comes up, why attempt? Why try? Commercialism. That's another one. They're not seen for who they are, but for what they can be. I'm going to read a couple things that I found. Burger King courts young workers. With a shortage of entry-level workers, Burger King in New York State has now been prompted to start hiring 14 and 15-year-olds for certain jobs. Previous efforts to attract help with incentives such as starting wages of $4 an hour, vacation pay, and profit sharing for a 16-year-old have not worked. The hiring is clearly a break with past practice and policy, though not contrary to New York State law. The younger teens will be hired at $3.40 an hour for permitted jobs such as cleaning, cashiering, and assembling orders. And another one, teenagers as big spenders. Teenagers have become a powerful consumer group in this country, attracting the direct attention of advertising companies like never before, says a recent study from the RAND Youth Poll. RAND used to do just, you know, adult issues. Now they're doing all the youth polls. The nationwide study revealed that even though there are 5 million less teens than there were in the 1970s, they are spending much more than teenagers were then. The part-time jobs after school and the babysitting at night allowed teenagers to have a disposable income last year of $49.8 billion. Girls 13 to 15 years old spent on the average $23.90 each week, while earning $27.50, which means they're saving approximately $5 for college, right? While boys the same age spent $22.10 and earned $26.10. Older girls from age 16 to 19 averaged $51.70 in spending and earned spent that much while earning $62 a week, while their male counterparts spent $48 while earning $60. Purchases most predictable are clothes, car upkeep, and snacks were most common, and major items like stereos, TVs, computers, and telephones followed closely behind. One of the Rand Poll statements was that teenagers were influenced by the new attention from ad agencies, reminding us that money and kids will continue to be a struggle as long as adults in this country continue to apply the pressure on teenagers to buy. Maybe one solution is to work with the adults and their attitudes first. Commercial-wise, they are seen as something as what they can do, not for who they are. Let's talk real quickly about the family. Family probably has the biggest impact, either positive or negative or a mixture of both. And some of the issues within the family, divorce and separation. 40% of all marriages end in divorce, basically nationwide, which affects well over 1 million youth per year. And that goes back to the whole idea of loss and rejection in a relationship. Where I live in King County, it's over 50%. They feel them many times. They feel themselves as teenagers. They feel themselves to be the cause. They see themselves as being abandoned. And they really get guilty feelings that they might be, or that they are, betraying the remaining parent by loving the absent parent. And then what happens a lot of times, parents pull them in, divorced or separate, or even couples that are still together will pull in the teenager as that third party. Pull in that teenager as the go-between. Another issue within the family is the traditional mother and father roles are in a state of flux, which leaves little energy left for children. Everybody's out pursuing the American dream. So mom and dad are both out of the house for longer periods of time, it seems. There also, in many cases, there's a lack of family love and support. It's a common factor. And I hear it so many from parents when they say, you know, we support them, we love them. And I explain to them, you probably do, but how does the teenager perceive it? That's the issue. How are they perceiving it? In case of doubt, you need to ask them. There may be ongoing depression in the family. Mom and dad may be in the midlife crisis for themselves, which is going to cause them to be depressed, so the whole family can be depressed. It goes on and on. Another issue is matching standards for success. Many adolescents will feel loved or accepted only when they match the parents' perfect standards. Anything less equals despair. The pressure that we put on as parents for them to measure up to our standards causes despair. I've already mentioned the drug and alcohol abuse, where almost one half of the suicide attempts are drug alcohol related. There's a lack of mutual respect would be another one within the family, which causes loss of esteem. Lack of mutual respect, in other words, respect for the individual, respect for privacy of the individual, and respect for the opinions of the individual. See, there's basically, I would say, five different cries for teens. They basically say, I want to belong, I need to be accepted, I want to be popular, I need to be successful at something. That's why it's very important for the non-athletic youth to be directed in some other area that they can show some success. And the fifth one is, I want adults to listen to my views and to my opinions, and to my feelings. Another issue in many families that I see as a source of despair is generally poor communication. If there's generally poor communication, when the adolescent gets into trouble or becomes depressed, that communication doesn't necessarily get real good all of a sudden. Okay, if it's poor, generally speaking, it's going to be even probably get worse when the adolescent gets in problems. So there's no support, no emotional support during crisis. Then the area of generally growing up. I see three areas. Competition with classmates and peers. A measuring up physically or socially. And I mentioned last week that especially for the junior high girls, the issues for them are height and breast development, and for the junior high boys, it's height. And if anybody was here last week, do you know what the other issue for the junior high male generally is?
Feet.
Size of feet. Oh, yeah. Measuring up physically or socially, the competition with classmates and peers. I think growing up, I think they have the life decisions. Such decisions that have to be made. And I have a son who's almost 12 years old, and he's already asking these questions. He comes in and goes, he did this just a few weeks ago. Dad, I don't know what I want to do when I grow up. And I just tell him, son, I'm 39 and I'm not quite sure what I want to do either. So that kind of helps. But, you know, he's already starting up. But there's the idea of choosing a job or choosing a college, choosing a career. They are being, like I mentioned earlier, they are being confronted with choices at an earlier age on alcohol and drugs. I was just reading another little item. I get these little items in the mail that have wonderful statistics. And it says, more children are trying alcohol at a younger age, a new study suggests. National Parents Research Institute for Drug Education surveyed 44,326 kids in grades 6 through 12. And they found that 33%, one-third of all sixth graders out of 44, that's pretty, had tried beer or wine, and close to 10% had tried liquor. In comparison, only 14% of the seniors said that they had tried beer or wine by the time they had reached sixth grade, and only about 7% had tried liquor by that age. That's with the outgoing. So it's getting down lower and lower. And the most common place for drinking was at home, for the younger children, and a friend's house for the older ones. Okay. So those type of decisions. There's also the life decisions on sexuality. What do I do with these sexual feelings? And of course, like I mentioned earlier, part of the difficulty is that they don't have the skills to make those decisions yet. They haven't developed the skills that the adults already know. And then the last area on their growing up is the separation issues, the issue of loss. The most important one, I guess, the most serious one of loss has to do with death. Death of a friend, death of a pet, death of a relative, especially a grandparent. Also regular parents. Separation issue of loss due to relationships and they are generally about the time they're born almost, but especially in the adolescent year, they're in the process of another separation issue, and that is breaking away from the family of origin, relying more on their peers. That's part of the process. That's part of the process of growing up, but it's also a loss issue. And whenever you have loss, you're going to have some type of grieving that needs to take place. Any type of loss, whether you move, change jobs, get fired, something on that line. Another loss for them is the whole aspect of moving, which I mentioned earlier. Another one is leaving home, maybe to join the Navy, the Army, whatever, or to go to college. And of course, they also deal with the loss through divorce and separation. Well, those are the symptoms and those are the sources, and I think I've kind of talked long enough. How about some response to this or some questions, concerns? Tomorrow we're going to talk, like I said, talking about what do we do with all this now? Type of stuff. So throw it open for the floor. Any questions or comments? Yes?
Do they know they're depressed? If you ask them what's wrong or are you feeling down, can they answer and say they're depressed or... They're often not aware of what's going on.
We can answer that two ways. Do you as an adult always know when you're depressed?
I'm not sure I always do.
Okay. I'm not sure if they always do either. We can ask one of the teenagers. Do you always know, teenagers, when you're depressed? Some say yes, some say no.
Some say. I'm depressed, and I'm always about wet sometimes.
Okay, say that again louder. That was good.
We know that we're depressed, and we always don't know what we're depressed about.
Okay. Did everybody hear that? They know when they're depressed, but they don't always know what they're depressed about. Sounds like an adult to me. I mean, I think an adult will say that. Does that answer? The question is basically, or the answer is basically, probably not. Probably not. They don't know, don't understand the causes. Anybody else?
I came into the living room of Chalet One last evening, mm-hmm. and there are five teenagers mm-hmm. listening to some music. And one of them said, "We're all depressed." And I said, "Well, what's the problem?" He said, "Well, our friends left today." Mm-hmm. So he knew why he was depressed. Mm-hmm.
Okay. What music were they listening to?
Shut it off the minute I said it. No.
But if you think back, I remember my parents were upset with the music I played. Such heavy groups as Peter, Paul, and Mary, and Arlo Guthrie. Real radical. Yeah. Blood, sweat, and tears. Crosby, Stills, Nash. Anyway, getting off.
How do you think we make them? I'm interested in other children fail right from the beginning. That's something I mentioned.
School system tells them that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they
have. How do you think?
I hear all the parents.
Yeah, lots of it, so they can tell me how.
Yeah, do. Parents. How do the school systems tell children that they fail?
They grade them.
Oh, I think the grade system. I think divide them up into groups of ability level. What?
I give F's.
Larry says he gives F's. I taught a class this spring on college level, and I gave F's too. You know, but they failed, and I told them why. They didn't hand in their stuff.
I think the way they divide them into groups is detrimental because children know which group they're in if they're divided by ability.
And I think, too, it's a general practice, and it's an overstatement that I'm going to make, but in large classrooms, the slower learners don't get the attention that mm-hmm. they need, and the fast ones don't get the attention, and you always, you know, I taught grade school, too, and I aimed it right towards the middle, basically.
Yeah, my daughter was 6 years old in first grade, and she was slow.
Yeah.
And she was always held in from recess. The teacher said, "You can't go out to recess because you didn't get your work done," and she was only, you know, 6 years old.
Yeah.
I really had some difficulties with it.
Anything else? Anybody else?
Well, just sitting here listening, if you hadn't told us that this was a discussion on adolescent depression, I wouldn't have been able to tell the difference between adult, what you're talking about as adults.
In many ways, yeah.
You know. And I think a big issue, and I work with adolescents too, is alienation. Lack of community and lack of bonding with community. It's a big issue for adults. And
can you give some examples of that?
They're isolated. They're isolated at a time they need the adult community to be including them and teaching them skills so that they could go out on their own. They're continuously isolated.
We've relied very much in the last many decades on the schools to do a lot of the stuff that I think the family should be doing. Mm-hmm. You know, and then we blame the schools that the kids aren't turning out, which I think should not be. Anybody else? Yeah.
Do you feel with therapy, is it fairly successful? Are most teenagers receptive to therapy?
You're counseling. Talking to a therapist, and you want to know
counseling.
If I'm successful.
Well, I've heard I've heard some counselors say they felt they couldn't work with teenagers between say.
Some of them choose not to.
That they felt that therapy would be successful afterwards, but not during that.
I do work with adolescents, and I have mm-hmm. in the past. I think I'm good. I enjoy it, you know, because I really, when I work with them, and I know others who do, actually look at it as a chance. There is so much ray of hope there with them, if you can get them, straightened out. But a lot of times, the issue with the adolescent isn't the adolescent, it's more of a family issue, you bet. And that's what it usually gets into. You know, so they don't become the problem anymore. Yeah.
I think we need to also guard against stereotyping. I don't think that just because an adolescent looks punk or puts on a costume or a face or whatever, that adolescent does or does not have a series of problems.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. When I was in high school, the mode of dress for us were the white Levi's, because they didn't have the multicolored yet. Okay, we wore our penny loafers or our loafers with no socks, or we had some type of tennis shoe on, no socks, which now is part of that with no socks, but they also wear without the shoelaces. And now the shoe companies are coming out smart. They're charging extra for the shoelaces. They know what's going on. Okay, and we wore sweatshirts cut off. We used to go out and buy these new sweatshirts, you know, and they cut off the sleeves, much to the dismay and anger of our parents, and then turn them inside out and wear them. That was the standard dress, you know. We didn't color our hair, but it got long enough. But stereotyping for dress, definitely. There was a girl in one of my youth groups who spent 3 years dressing in pure black, just black eyeshadow, black lipstick, black. And her parents were wonderful, didn't say a thing. She came to church that way. She sat by herself in church that way. wherever she went, she, you know, type of bit. But that was the mode that she chose. Now, when you remind her of that, you know, she denies it. she can't stand the color black anymore, you know, and she's doing wonderful, but her parents, you know, backed off from it. They didn't make a case of it, you know, and she turned out, she's fine.
Do you think when kids are going through those kind of thoughts and they, you know, they insist that, oh no, I'm not going to give this up when I, you know, reach such and such an age, do you think that parents should just go ahead and say, okay, you know, do your own
thing? Unless it becomes self-destructive, or it's breaking the law, I usually recommend that they back off from it. I also tell the parents, think back now. Come on, be honest. There were things the way you dressed, you know, or snuck out of the house. My wife remembers her older sister not being allowed to wear makeup. You know, used to wait to get to school and then put the makeup on and then take it all off before they came home. Okay. Or wearing pantyhose, you know, you take it to school, you sneak it to school, then you put it on. Wear it, then you take it off before you come home and act like nothing happened. Generally, if it isn't self-destructive or harmful to somebody else or against the law, yeah. That's part of that respect that is needed, I think, towards a teenager. They need their privacy. Okay. They have to have their thoughts and their communication, you know, what they say, respected. And I think their fads have to be respected. Their music has to be respected. That doesn't mean you have to put up with a loud blasting all the time. But they, you know, basically should be able to pick their own music. You know, studies have shown that half the time they don't understand the words being said anyway. But they are they're drawn to the music because of the beat. It's only when they find out what the words are. I did that once on a youth retreat. I did not lead it, but I was part of the sub support group, and it was on music, and the presenter had picked out five popular songs at that time and had the words printed up, and then we spent the time studying the words. You know, what do the words? And the vast majority of these junior high kids did not know that's what the words were. That, you know, I didn't know he was saying that. You know, now what do those words really mean? And there were some good songs in there. It turned out kind of nice. They enjoyed that. So, anybody else? Yes, ma'am.
This, I don't know how this will apply, but my daughter is a 4-H equine reader. And I have been observing some of the girls that are in her group, There was one girl, now this will indicate clothing, peer pressure. The girl was wearing green spiked hair, heavily made up, earrings hanging down, way down, and she was fairly active. She was good with her horse. The pattern there was that she started to lean more away from the group. And as this year progressed, she has dropped out. My daughter had tried to get the other girls. My daughter had talked to this girl, tried to encourage her, because apparently her parents just let her do whatever she wanted to do. This did not seem to help, and she started missing meetings. She wasn't taking good care of her horse.
Mm-hmm.
Danella tried to get the other girls to talk to her and encourage her, but she started in with drugs,
mm-hmm.
and she's completely dropped out.
Mm-hmm. What's her family like?
That's what I said. The parents are very indifferent.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find that some of these children who have horses, their parents let them buy their own horses. They don't care what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So that seems to be quite a pattern in our life.
There's a lot of times what I see is a basic indifference from adults.
Right.
If you want to help to help the adolescent, either your own or others, and I would say become some type of a youth advocate.
Mm-hmm.
Help out in a volunteer basis with, you know, stuff in the community or at the school, something on that line. On the idea of dress, with this girl who dressed in all black, and I recommended this to her parents, but they didn't follow through, but I recommended it to other parents, with the spiked hair, you know, green and stuff like that, take a picture of them, and then just save it, and present it to them about 5 years later, 7 years later, something on that line. They'll deny it. They'll say it's not them. Something on that line. But I would imagine that with the girl, you know, that indifference, that's a scary part. I see a lot of going on. And we're going to talk some more about that tomorrow. And I do believe our time is up. So hopefully I'll see you tomorrow morning. And thank you.